mission. The picture was of the D-Day landings and of the Second World War and having an army mindset with field hospitals for those having difficulties or struggling. But like a field hospital, it's with a view to equip people to mission. And over the next couple of weeks, we're going to spend a little bit more time looking at a few more prophetic words from a few years ago, the one that Kath brought, and also the one more recently that, that Richard brought to us. And Jared shared right at the beginning of this series, when a prophetic word is brought to the church, it's all of our responsibility to weigh it. And to summarise what we mean by weighing it, it's like testing it. So if you take a bag of coins to the bank, they weigh it and test that it's genuine and has the right number. It's not counterfeit. And so when we hear prophecy, we test whether it's genuine and have the responsibility to all respond to it. And in the first half, I asked Kath and Richard to share the two words they brought. One of them relates to our history and who we are. And the second one is a reminder to us that's just been brought in recent months with all that we've been going through as a church. And like I said, I believe we need to hear these words. We need to weigh them and say, yeah, no, I give credibility to that. And then we need also to respond to it. How do I need to respond? So we have the two words up there, Kath's word, the net, and Richard's word, the picture of the scaffolding couple. And they both relate to building community together. And the promise of the net is that as we do that, people will be added to us. But the second one, Richard's word, is one that as we do that, it's the day-to-day opportunities to interact that matter. And the strength of community lies in those interactions that we see building life together as a priority. And as I've heard both these words and have been thinking about them and praying about them, I was drawn to a passage in 1 Corinthians, and it's part of a letter to the early churches written by a man called Paul. And I want to just listen to it together. So I've got a video clip, if you play the first of the two clips, and I just want us to listen to this passage.
I'll show you a still more excellent way. If I speak in tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all my possess to the poor and give over my body to the hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonour others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part. But when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only a reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love.
It's obvious what that passage is about, loving well. But to be honest, the context of that passage isn't really about an airy, floating on the clouds kind of a love with all that lovely music in the background. When Paul writes this passage on the way of love, He's in the midst of addressing all kinds of issues in the church. Just listen to some of the stuff he's dealing with. They're arguing over who is leading them, who's in charge. He says, basically, of the people that he's writing to, that most of them are the dregs of society. He makes it clear they weren't chosen because they were particularly talented or a clever bunch, but because in their hopelessness, God is going to do something amazing through them. They're pretty arrogant. They talk a good game, but their lives are far from perfect. They're suing each other in court. They're sleeping around, cheating on partners, even within their own families. They're not thinking about one another and actually leading each other into... They're actually leading each other into difficulties. How many times have I spoken ill of someone or said something about someone or got the best seat or was the first in the queue to get the food without thinking of others? They found new freedoms as Christians, but they aren't thinking about how their behaviour impacts on others. Actually, when you hear that passage, you actually get a sense this love that Paul is talking about is actually going to cost me something. And so perhaps when we hear that passage, we should hear it a bit more like this. You can play the second.
And I will show you a still more excellent way. If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, if I have a faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. Give all the best possessed to the poor, and give over my body to hardship.
Around this passage over the last few weeks, I came across another book and another phrase, and it stuck with me. And the phrase is, love is not blind, but it is bound. And I want to try and explain what I mean by that, or what this person meant. Paul isn't blind to the problems with the relationships in the church. He doesn't pretend the problems aren't there. When he speaks of loving one another, he isn't saying ignore problems or difficulties. Love isn't blind. But he goes on to say in this letter, you are my dear children. I love you as a father would. I always thank God for you. He's desperate for them to know more of who Jesus is and what kind of life he has called them to. He talks of hardships, of the energy, the time he spent with them on their behalf. You can't miss throughout the letter to the Corinthians his devotion to this group of people. He's passionate that they use the gifts that God has given them. And next week, Steve Gallagher and Gordon, they're going to talk about using of the gifts and sharing warnings. But and at times in the letter, he does actually even praise them. But Paul is committed to them. He describes himself as one who was sent but from God to them. He is bound to them. Through thick or thin, he is in it with them. And that's what it means by love is bound. It isn't blind, but it is bound. And Paul, in the midst of addressing all sorts of issues about how to deal with this thing or that thing, and some of them incredibly divisive, he hits us with this passage, 1 Corinthians 13. He starts to say that before you deal with any of this stuff, consider the way in which you do it. And it's at this point I'd like to introduce you to our newest church member. So if you can bring up the picture. This is Billy Gumbel. Billy has moved up from Swansea. And there's a bit of a buzz with Billy moving up from Swansea, because he's a top preacher. He knows his Bible inside out. He's got 2 theology degrees. He speaks 4 languages, and he is known for bringing heavenly utterances and songs in lots of meetings he participates in. He's also pretty amazing in prophetic gifting, and he regularly prays for the sick and sees healings. He's got the gift of faith that even I've appealed to him to start praying that he'd bring some of the Welsh mountains just that little bit nearer to Bromsgrove. He's also known for his gift of generosity to the poor. Last year, he gave up his holiday to Spain to pay for repairs for a local charity. And he's got books published, and he regularly tweets. And there is a Twitter account open to him. Unfortunately, if you get to know Billy personally, you start to see some of his faults. In fact, Billy likes to keep his distance, because he's aware of that, and he kind of takes some of the shine off, but still some people do know him a bit. He's pretty proud of his successes. He posts regular updates on Twitter about his ministry successes. He's actually quite rude, not blatantly, but when you're talking to him, he doesn't give you his full attention, and he tends to bring conversations back to himself. He's actually got quite a short fuse, particularly when he's tired or stressed. Not a Sunday gathering like this, but maybe in the car when he's running late, or he's been cut up by someone, or when his kid Billy Jr. or with his long-suffering Mrs. Gumbel. In fact, even though he does give a lot of his money away and makes sacrifices, privately he rather resents this. He envies those with a bigger house, or a nicer car, or a newer phone. And even Billy is aware that something is probably missing. In fact, for all his successes and good works, he lacks joy quite a lot of the time. He lacks the joy of knowing God really loves. He knows God loves him up here. He could quote you hundreds of verses on God's love. But here in his heart, he struggles to penetrate. But as I wrote this talk, a bit of a scary thing started to occur. That's a bit like me some of the time. I read this passage and I quote some of the verses, and I can't help but start to feel quite hopeless and pretty bad. And not only that, but as I look at these outward gifts that Paul cites here in this thing, the prophecy, the healing, the mercy, there's nothing in there in this passage to indicate those aren't real gifts from God. Those are real tongues, real prophecies, real acts of giving. So it's possible I can do these things without love in my heart. And God will still allow me to, even though I don't deserve them. So how should I receive this passage? Should I feel condemned by it? Should I feel challenged that I'm doing all the right things but missing the point? Is it a measuring stick that I put my name into the passage and see how well I do? Steve is kind, Steve is patient. You see, if we start applying this passage to ourselves, in the everyday, it will never be an easy road. To be patient with someone is to be first feel frustrated with them over something. To not be easily angered is at first to feel wronged, let down, or upset. To not keep a record of wrongs means you've been wronged. And the word record, and plural for wrongs, suggests more than once. To not be proud, you have to think of others at all times. And that sounds hard. So I went back to the passage, and Paul makes a really interesting statement almost at the end. And you can almost miss it. Even as I am fully known. What does this passage say about God's knowledge of us? That we're fully known. God isn't blind to how hard this is. He knows how messed up I am. He knows my inner thoughts. He knows me fully, and yet he still sent his son for my sake. For me, this is both fearful and an amazing truth. Jesus knows the worst about me. This is quite a horrifying thought. Yet he loves me, and he died for me. And knowing this is the most wonderful truth. You see, before we apply this passage to ourselves, we must first look to Jesus. Jesus has shown us the most excellent way. And it ended at the right hand of the Father. But he went through the cross to get there. And he did it for my sake, for your sake. And if we don't grasp the necessity of the cross in this passage and the extent of Jesus' love for us, then this passage will make no sense. So when it hurts so much to apply the truth of this passage, to forgive, to be patient, to be kind, don't go it alone. The promise of Jesus is that he will provide everything we need for life and godliness through his power. Be loved well by Jesus. Go to him, ask him for the love you cannot give. There's a whole bit of this passage I don't really have time to touch on. We know in part, but we are fully known. You see, we don't know the full picture. We don't know why someone reacted the way they did or let me down so badly. I don't even fully understand why I do some of the things I do or why I can be so hateful or cutting at times. But Jesus fully knows me. He knows the worst of me and he still died for me. He sees our weaknesses and our sacrifices for his sake and the promises that one day the full extent of his mercy and his love will be revealed to me face to face. It's there in these verses. It is an appeal to love well, but you also have to know you have been loved well by Jesus. You cannot pay the food bill until the money's gone in the bank. You can't give what you haven't received. You're called to give love in trust of the love you've received. You don't necessarily always feel like it, but it's there in faith because you know that love God has shown you and you have to sometimes make a choice. You see, we bang on about churches and building relationships and I'll come back to Richard's word. If one of those couplers withdraws through offence or upset or lack of fear or trust, it's going to affect the whole structure. That's what Richard said. If you take one of those struts out, the whole structure is affected. Or take the picture of the net. One strained or broken relationship affects how good the whole net is. And one of the reasons we have a membership is that you're committing to community, not just to individuals. When one of those individuals badly lets you down or hurts you, it's your commitment to Jesus and to his call to live in community that will enable you to pursue the way of biblical peacemaking with that individual. Don't just walk away. Strive for a better way, as this passage says, the most excellent way. In Matthew 18, what's the first thing Jesus says to do when two people can't sort out something? Get a third from the community involved. That's the way of the Christian. Our loyalties are to Jesus first and foremost. But what is Jesus' body? The church, one another. As for me, there have been a lot of choices to love over the last few months. A friend deceived me about some money. Someone I cared for a lot has misunderstood my intentions. I felt tired, overwhelmed at times. yet I'm still called to spend time with my kids and my wife. I felt unappreciated at times. I've had ideas and suggestions and enthusiasm dismissed out of hand. I've had phone calls and texts ignored, and I've even had abusive texts. But I've also experienced love in this community. Steve Gallagher, just asking how I was at the end of a phone call a few months ago. Jonathan, Jared and Ben, being such encouraging Christian brothers to me. David Perry and the Dixons, and the way that they've served with such enthusiasm. Helen Hodgson, with all the texts, encouraging emails and texts that I've had. Being invited to a couple in our life groups for an impromptu barbecue. Card from Nerland Perm. A meeting with Jared and him giving me some honest feedback. I said, love isn't blind, so it's good to get it. Three things to finish on. Don't just be involved with the Grace Church community. Be committed to it. I heard a quote the other day about the difference between being involved in something and being committed. And my final picture there is of breakfast, bacon and eggs. The chicken is involved, they say. The pig is committed. Be a pig. Go the whole hog in loving. You will never love too much, so strive to love more. This passage isn't primarily about those wonderful romantic evenings or the fun night out with your mates. It's about loving in a very broken, very disillusioned and at times painful world. In a church where people at times blow you away with their acts of kindness, but at other times can say such hurtful things. Loving people who are blatantly in the wrong. We're salt and light. Let's show people the hope of the world by our love for one another. And that's the net. Take every opportunity to encourage, build up, thank, appreciate the people around you. Do not underestimate the power of a simple word or act of kindness. That's the picture of the couplet. Love is not formed through a few couplers spread thinly, but by many, many interactions and investment in time together, face to face, over social media, on the phone, texts, being in each other's lives. Helen and Jared have recently invited a lady to live with them in their home, and one of the things Jared said to me about it was that the boys are going to be on their best behaviour for a few weeks while this lady settles in. And it's actually true, isn't it? We can keep our guards up pretty well for a short space of time. Once a week on a Sunday, or even twice with meeting in the week. But you start living in and out of each other's lives, and who you really are starts coming to the surface. That's authentic. Then we can really love one another. I love that our life groups do this. It isn't a meeting, but it's many, many couplers. Let's continue to build on this. Let's make ourselves known to one another. Be encouraging one another daily. And I just want to come back to the very gifted Billy Gumbel to finish. Paul, when he writes to the Corinthians, he's not critical of using gifts. So if you happen to be as gifted as Billy Gumbel, then use them. In fact, on either side of this passage in Corinthians, Paul makes much of using the gifts in the church to serve the church. And as I said, next week we're going to spend a little bit more time looking at using gifts and different gifts. And we have a variety and a beauty and a strength in the number and variety of gifts we have in this church. But love is the most excellent way. Running a meeting well is good, but being in a meeting full of love is the most excellent way.
Yes.
It is the way Jesus is with us.
Yes.
And it is the way we are to be with one another.
Yes.
And it is the way of being a ray of hope to others out there.
Yes.
How will they know that we are Jesus' disciples? By our love for one another.
Yes, very good. Very good.
As I was just sort of thinking what we do and how we might respond, I just want you to just close your eyes for a second. And I just want to mention two things to say, really, as I was praying about this. The first thing is this. If there is someone that when I say, yeah, there's a little bit need sorting out, make peace with them for Jesus' sake. First of all, take it to Jesus and go to him. But secondly, do what it takes to make it right. If you need to take it because they've offended you, then take it to them. And do it in love. But make it right and do it for Jesus' sake. If that's you, if someone's come to your mind, then do what you can. Jesus says it doesn't work out perfectly, and actually, you know, we see that throughout the Bible. But he says, where possible, do it. Live at peace. And the second thing, just want you to commit in your heart, or think about committing to, is taking that opportunity to encourage daily. To take every opportunity you can to build up, encourage, strengthen one another. Every interaction, just as Richard said in that word. I'm just going to pray to finish. Jesus, we thank you that we come here because you have shown us the most excellent way. And it is a way that leads to you, the Father's right hand. It is the way that leads so that we will know you face to face. But Jesus, also, we come knowing that actually that way came through the cross. And you have called us in this life to actually forego justice at times. Forego times when we are hurt or in pain or when we have to give more than we have. And you have said, come to me. And you have said, go and do that. And Father, I just pray for each one of us. I pray as a community and as a church, that as we go forward, we take on the words, the direction of those prophetic words and this passage, and we apply it, and we apply it, and we apply it. And when we mess up, we come back to you. But Jesus, I thank you that because you fully know us, you know everything about us, we can be entirely confident that you have unending grace for us, God, in this. But Father, I pray for us as a community that we press into this. In your precious name, amen.